from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The State Water Resources Control Board voted yesterday to extend through September California's existing emergency water conservation regulations and prohibitions against wasting water. Here's Wade Crowfoot, CEO of the nonpartisan California Water Foundation.
Shame on us if we don't use this drought as a wake-up call. We've had droughts in the past in California, but scientific facts tell us that winters are warming in California. That means less snowpack to form the annual water supply.
With rainfall still drenching parts of the state and an already average winter's worth of snow in the Sierras, the move has been criticized by some water managers and Republican legislators who don't think conditions warrant extending the emergency regulations. We're going to discuss the decision with KQED science editor Craig Miller, who joins us in studio. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Michael.
So, you know, people are saying there's so much snowpack, greater than we've ever seen before. Why is this necessary? The argument comes down from the State Water Resources Control Board as to what we just heard from Wade Crowfoot. It's necessary when you're talking about science.
Yeah, at the hearing in Sacramento yesterday, before they voted on this, this is the State Water Board we're talking about, the water districts just were lining up to say, where's the emergency? Why are we extending emergency drought regulations when there's no emergency? And the reasons basically were twofold. One is, you know, we've got 2 months left of winter, more than 2 months, and anything can happen. We have had years when the tap just suddenly shut off for no apparent reason. And with our warmer than usual temperatures that we've been getting lately, there is concern that the snowpack could melt pretty rapidly. So that was one reason. But the other reason is that the things that the state has put in place over the past several years toward water conservation have essentially worked, and they don't want to lose that momentum. They don't want to send the message now, okay, drought's over, back to business as usual.
Well, there's also continuing impact. Central Valley, for example, and groundwater is still depleted. There are things that have to be considered and taken into account in this whole equation. But what are they actually spelling out here? Again, wasteful practices, you know, like if you're watering a lawn at night, those kinds of things are still
verboten. Essentially what they're doing is they're extending the rules, which they had already relaxed, by the way. You know, there was a period when the state was imposing on local water agencies. They were giving them conservation quotas and saying you must meet this. They've already backed off of that, and they're letting the local agencies basically, through a formula, determine their own water resiliency and their own conservation quotas.
Excuse me, got about 80% now that have passed the so-called stress test.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. The way they do it is they have the local agencies take a stress test, which is designed to show that they can withstand a 3-year drought similar, you know, of the severity of the one that we just had. And more than 80% actually passed that test. But they're also in the process of making permanent certain water rules. The governor wants to make these things permanent. Like we've heard this list before many times, you know, hosing off sidewalks and things unless there's a health and safety issue, washing cars without a shut off nozzle, and watering, you know, while it's raining or right after it's raining. And my nominee for most widely ignored drought rule in California, which is restaurants not serving water to customers unless they ask for it, which even the state admits is not terribly enforceable and mostly symbolic.
There is also a draft of a report, at least, that the Water Board and state agencies have released that shifts from the statewide mandatory water restrictions, yeah?
Well, what they're doing, they're in the process of gradually converting from an emergency situation, which we are seeing the end of this epic drought. There's no question about that in my mind, although we can talk about some of the exceptions to that you just mentioned. But they're trying to, as the state regulators put it, they're trying to make conservation a permanent way of life in California. And so they're transitioning from this short-term strategy, which largely worked, to a longer-term strategy of putting conservation measures in place to kind of lock down California's long-term water security.
And to make water more efficient and drought preparation more a part of a long-range plan, yes?
That's right. Things like capturing stormwater, recycling water, a lot of strategies that the state's been aware of and local agencies have been aware of, but we haven't been taking full advantage of.
Well, we've been talking a lot through the years with Governor Brown about rainy day funds. There's a lot of there's been some significant water savings in California, too.
Yeah, the governor, he initially said at the beginning of the drought, he said, all right, everybody has to save 20%, but it's voluntary. Well, they didn't do it. He got about half of that. That's when he came in and said, all right, time to get tough. No more Mr. Nice Guy. It's 25% and it's mandatory. And that program essentially, and that really did come very close to essentially achieve the goals that that the state had laid out for them.
And when we talk about exceptions to, you know, the drought being over and hallelujah and all that, what else do you include?
Oh, yeah. If you look at this thing called the U.S. Drought Monitor, this map that the federal climatologists put out every week, you will still see a big red blotch around Santa Barbara and Ventura County. That's because of a couple of different reasons. One is that they missed out on a lot of the early season precipitation. They're still playing catch up. And they also depend a lot on groundwater. Groundwater is a huge issue still in California. Not only there, but in parts of, say, Tulare County and southern San Joaquin Valley, there are still people down there who have to have bottled water trucked in because their wells have gone dry. It's going to take a while to correct that.
So these rules, which were supposed to end on the 28th of this month, will be put in abeyance for now. But what about the homeowners associations? They still seem to have some real concerns here.
Well, the rules will continue through September. That's what the technical end of California's water year, unless the board, they say they may come back in May and take another look at this after the winter's really done and we really know what we got in terms of rain and snow. Or it's possible that the governor may lift the drought emergency that he put in place way back in January of 2014, which he still has not lifted. So homeowners association, they've already made a rule that a homeowners association cannot come down on you for letting your lawn go green, trying to comply with your state and local drought restrictions. And now they've added another dimension to this, which is cities and counties cannot either.
And just talk about the politics for a moment, Craig. Why were Republicans so concerned about actually saying the drought is over and not having these conservation rules kept in place?
Well, you know, the term drought has been unfortunately in itself politicized very much in California. You remember famously that President, then candidate Trump, came to Fresno and announced that there was no drought. Where did he get that? He had just met with a bunch of farmers who said there's no drought because, you know, we're pushing all the water to the ocean. And of course, that misses the point that number one, there was an extraordinarily severe drought going on at the time. And number two, we do have to leave some water in the rivers, not only to maintain the ecosystems in the rivers, but to keep salt water from pushing back into the delta and contaminating our drinking water. That comes out of the bay. Tides push that in. We need a certain amount of flow in the rivers to push back on that.
And we also need to factor into this the need for other sources of water if we indeed find ourselves more dry in the future, recycling, desalinization, which are pretty expensive.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that the Water Board actually gave local agencies an exemption if they've made substantial investments in new sources of water since the beginning of the drought.
We're talking to KQED's Craig Miller, who is science editor for KQED, and we want to hear from you, your thoughts about the state voting to extend water conservation rules, discussing the state's Water Resources Control Board decision yesterday to extend emergency drought regulations. Is the drought over, and should we be once again celebrating that, or should we be taking more care, which is essentially what the decision suggests, and being more mindful of the fact that things can change where the weather is concerned very radically and very quickly. Let me invite you to join the program. Our toll-free number is available to you. That number is 866-733-6786. Lots of questions probably from you. Feel free to bring them forward here or any comments you might have. We welcome your involvement in the program. Again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. A number of other ways you can communicate with us and let us know what's on your mind with respect to the water ruling on conservation. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website and post any concerns, questions, or comments you have there, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And again, Sierra Nevada snowplows are 171%. That's the most in, 22 years?
There is already, Michael, an entire average winter's worth of snow on the ground in the Sierra. It is nearly double what you'd expect it to be at this date, and in of all places, the Southern Sierra, which had been lagging, it's more than double. NASA just did a study in which they said that this was the snowiest January on record in California, and this just in the course of two big atmospheric river storms that came through in January dumped enough snow on the Sierra that it could essentially make up for more than 5 years of less snow than we should have been getting. So, you know, that's pretty remarkable. But that's the way California's weather works.
And I'm going to go to our callers here in just a moment, but I want to read. Joe says, does 1 year end a drought? It will take many years to replenish the groundwater that was pumped during the drought.
That's right. That's exactly right. The aquifers in the state have been severely overpumped during the drought because what happens when you don't have enough surface water to meet your needs? Farms and cities start pumping all, you know, those pumping those aquifers even harder. And they've taken an enormous amount of water out over the past several years. And I think I saw a figure of 10 million acre feet, which is actually more than two Lake Shastas full of water that have been, you know, like basically overdrawn from these aquifers. And these things don't recharge right away. What we're getting now will certainly help, but it will take years.
Sean writes on our Facebook page, there would be no need for conservation rules if all individuals and businesses were charged a fair price for water rather than have those costs be subsidized.
Yeah, and even that is controversial, of course. More and more water agencies are starting to go to a system of what they call tiered pricing, which is basically, you know, the more you use, the more you pay. Even that, however, was challenged early on in court. When San Juan Capistrano tried to do it, the plaintiff said it was a violation of, I think it was Prop 218 that says that it's basically a local version of Prop 13, essentially, that you can't have a tax, if this is a tax, without a two-thirds vote. But they're finding ways to institute pricing that actually addresses people's use of water.
And if you just join us, we're talking about water with Craig Miller. We talked about fire in the first section. Now we're talking about water. Craig is the science editor for KQED. And we asked listeners on Twitter if they think the Water Board was right in extending California's conservation rules. 87% said yes, 13% said no. And you can vote by going to our Twitter page. We're at KQED Forum. Ben writes, according to the drought map at the Exploratorium Museum last week, much of Southern California is still in a drought. If we pump the water south, then we too will be at least efficient.
Yes. Well, we're talking about how much water I'm not sure where the question is in that. It's just a statement.
I think it's a statement, yeah. But I think he's also suggesting that we're going to be pumping south perhaps and losing more water and maybe making us deficient. Another listener writes, there's still depleted groundwater. It may never come back. We need a per capita quota based on available water. Any person who doesn't use theirs can release it to the market, and people who want more can buy it at a market price. We'll go to our calls. Let me, in fact, go to our first caller from Vacaville. Randy, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just have one question, and I'll take the answer off the air. But I was curious what the scientists now, or if there's anybody looking into, when there are times of excess water, like right now, the possibility of recharging the aquifers by pumping water into the ground to restore what's been lost.
They're doing it. Orange County, in particular, has been a leader in this, and it's spreading around the state. They actually recycling plan involves taking wastewater, but then instead of like trying to treat it, you know, through a plant or something like that, and running it back through the pipes, they're actually putting it back in the ground, letting it percolate down into the aquifers, and then taking it back out of the ground and basically letting nature treat it.
But so, in the piece you wrote, I just want to get this statistic out there because it's pretty significant. You say groundwater in the southern part, actually you're quoting someone at UC Davis, Jay Lund, talked with us about water a couple of times. Groundwater in the southern part of the Central Valley remains more than 10 million acre feet below pre-drought levels.
Right, right. That's the figure that I tossed out a couple of minutes ago. It's the two Lake Shastas full of water. It's a huge amount of water, and the aquifers are extremely strained right now, and it is going to take a while to recharge them. And some of it may not recharge. There are places in the Central Valley that are literally sinking right now because the geologic formations that hold the water underneath have been so wrung out. It's like you throw a wet sponge on the counter, and in the sun, when it dries out, it shrinks. And those formations may never fully recharge.
Actually, we got a question here about groundwater. It's coming from Bill in Menlo Park. Bill, go ahead.
Hi. I was maybe your last caller just answered the question. But how do groundwater aquifers refill naturally?
They fill.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks for the question. Craig Miller.
They fill in a few different ways. One is precipitation, that when it falls on the ground and pools, it sinks down and eventually gets to the level where the water table is. And it also happens in the bottom of riverbeds and streams when they're running. Water sinks down through those as well.
Here's a tweet from Colleen who says, I love how forward-thinking Governor Brown is on this issue. Why wait for another emergency? Thank you for extending water conservation. On the other hand, here's Tom who says, they don't want to claim this drought is over so Jerry Brown can tunnel Delta water to the south.
This is a repeating theme we're hearing about. Yes.
And Susan writes, this is California. We're basically in a permanent drought that is spiked by periods of rain. We are foolish to think that 2 years of rain have changed that history. We must be in a permanent water conservation mindset. And let me bring some more of your calls on here. We'll go next to Benicia. Welcome, Kenneth. Morning.
Hi, good morning to you. I just really wanted to touch on, you know, the prices of water and them keeping this in our drought phase is just really putting the burden on the individual when really we need more state people coming into control of making our municipalities do more things to conserve or recycle water. In our area, for example, we can go to Contra Costa County, get as much recycled water that's filtered. We can go to Benicia, and all of it's just dumped right into the bay. But then for myself, I have a small urban farm. I collect rainwater, and I might be in the top 20% or 10% of water efficiency because of my rainwater, but I'm still getting charged so much for water usage, and it's ridiculous, and it shouldn't be on the backs of people that were paying for that.
It's one of the cruel paradoxes of water and water policy in that the more you conserve, the more you pay. And this is because water agencies, at the end of the day, you know, they make their money by selling water. And the more they sell, the more revenue they get. And even if they when we cut back, they're getting less revenue, but they still have to maintain the infrastructure that they've put in place. And so they're getting squeezed. I saw one estimate that I think this drought cost water agencies around the state more than $500 million in lost revenue. So ultimately, what we have to do is try to decouple, similar to what we've done with electrical utilities, that they don't charge based on the electrons they sell anymore. We have to do something similar with the water industry.
And let me thank the caller. I'm going to go right to some more calls here. But again, in your article, Craig, you quote Max Gomberg, who heads up climate and conservation for the Water Board. And he says these rules, they are temporary. They can be relaxed sooner than September. The board could actually decide to revisit the state's water conditions in May or possibly rescind the rules then.
Yeah. Or, as I mentioned, the governor could just decide to lift his drought emergency order that's been in place for a couple of years.
And we go to more of your calls, and we go next to Peter in Santa Rosa. Peter, you're on.
Thank you. I'd just like to kind of say what Susan had said. We're always in a drought. With nearly 40 million people in this state, with a major agricultural economy based upon irrigation in semi-desert areas, even though I've just got 6 inches of rain here in the last week, we're always in a drought. And I think the Water Board is correct, and I think we need to also look at agriculture working. Maybe we shouldn't be doing irrigation of rice fields by inundating the fields with water. But anyway, yeah, we're always in a drought, and I think the Water Board is correct.
All right. I thank you for that call. Thank you for weighing in. Good to hear from you. And there's a listener who has a question on Twitter. How much of this water will we need to fight the fires during the summer when all the spring's growth ignites?
How much of the water will we need? Well, we're going to be, I think, in better shape this year if that's where the question is going. I think the fire season, it's always a double-edged sword. When you get a lot of rain at the end of the season, you get more vegetation that creates more fuel for fires. But I think weighing that against having the soil moisture content being so much higher than it has been over the last several years, and the water content of the vegetation itself, which are both fire inhibitors, I think the bottom line is we're going to benefit from that.
And we'll go to more of our calls. Let's go next to Emily in Fairfax. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling to give a different perspective about water that I've learned as a child. I'm in my mid-40s, and as a child, I spent more than a year in a refugee camp in Malaysia because of the war in Vietnam. And during months and months in the refugee camp, I learned that the importance of even a drop of water, because it was such a scarcity. And I came to the United States almost 35 years ago, and I see living in California, there's so much waste, even during a drought or when there's a push from the governor to conserve water. And now that we have some momentum about water conservatism, I I would so encourage the listeners and everybody in California to continue to have and build on that culture of water conservation, because I feel that water is so essential. It's more important than even food, and it gives us food. And I want us to use Australia as an example, because when Australia a few years ago went through 6 years of drought, the whole country went into conservation mode. And after 6 years later, after the drought was over, they continue that mindset. So now Australia, you know, it's water is important to them, and everybody, including the average citizen, conserve water by recycling their water, filtering their water, using water that they've used to water their plants. And so there's that mindset in Australia, and I would love for us to continue to have that kind of grow that culture of water conservation in California, even though the drought, you know, some people see the drought is over because of the rain. And that's my comment.
Well, I thank you for that comment, Emily. Reasonable, thoughtful comment, and much appreciated.
I think the culture is catching on. There's no question. It is taking longer here than it has in some other places. But Australia, remember, they had a 10-year drought. That really got people's attention. And they did some drastic – I mean, they basically threw out the playbook and reinvented how they treat water, how they trade water, how they use water in Australia. They also did some things that they regret, like they built too many desal plants because when water is abundant, they sit there idle when people still have to pay for them. But I think gradually California's catching on.
There's a comment in a tweet from Catherine. There's a pattern of villainizing farmers for overdraft of water resources, but where does research money go? Not to sustainable farms.
I would differ with that. As actually, if you asked the state agriculture secretary about that, I think she would differ with that. Farms are becoming more water efficient. Again, maybe not moving as quickly as we'd like, but it is happening.
And this is a comment that certainly I've heard on a number of occasions whenever water comes up for discussion. And during the drought years, Eric writes, over 90% of water every year is used for agriculture, mining, and industry. The amount of water we allow industry to waste is staggering. It is insane that we should try to regulate the individual consumer rather than the corporations who are abusing the case of water, the ease of water usage in our state. This is not a drought problem, but a water usage problem. When will we debate the water usage problem?
Yeah, I mean, there's an excellent point in there in that if all this attention, you know, or much of this attention, everything we've been talking about really has been directed at urban water consumers. But if you add up all of the urban water consumers in California and put industry commercial use on top of that, you can only move the needle by about 10%, no more. The rest is agriculture or water that we have to leave in the system for the ecosystems.
Again, Craig Miller is here with us in studio, science reporter and science editor for KQED. And here's a caller from Benicia. Allison, good morning.
Hello. I wanted to address what the caller from Benicia earlier said about dumping water into, you know, it going out to waste. And there are things that people don't know that are going on to help save water. And we just completed a year-long study to make sure that our water met the conditions that the Valero refinery needs to be able to reuse it for their cooling towers. And we put it out about 2 to 3 million gallons a day, the wastewater plant that goes into the Sacramento River. And we did a study to transfer 2 million gallons of that straight to the Valero refinery to reuse.
Great.
Which would save both water for us and also make a more stable source for them. And at this point, we're just waiting for the grant money from the state to become available for us to begin building the pipeline to go over there.
Well, so the kind of thing you're going to see a lot more
of. Yeah, that's an encouraging story. Thank you for that, Allison. Good to hear from you this morning. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can. We'll go next to Catherine. Catherine, welcome.
Hi, I'm calling because my worry is that if the main way to regulate the water penalties is through fines, does this mean that eventually we'll get to a point where the rich people get to have all the water they want and the poor people don't get that right?
There's no question that fines can be regressive if they're not administered properly, but they're trying to do it in a tiered fashion. That generally the people who are on the lower end of the income scale are not using anywhere near the volumes of water as people with lush landscaping and large properties. And so those people who are sucking down that water to keep their lawns green and their topiary in shape. You know, ultimately, the idea is that they would be the ones paying extra to do that. But, you know, a group of wealthy property owners in Hillsborough got together and sued the local water district over this very thing. They didn't think these restrictions, they should apply to them.
Catherine, I thank you for your call. Actually getting multiple kind of comments like the one I'm going to read here, which often do come up when water comes up for discussion. Why, Amy writes, when we talk about water conservation, do we never talk about meat farms and the amount of water consumed by the animals we eat? It's exponentially higher than human consumption and completely unsustainable.
That's true.
She's right.
That's folded into the agriculture equation. When we talk about ag using 80 or more percent of the water in California, it does include ranching, livestock production, and that sort of thing.
And we'll take another caller from South City. Dave, that's you. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I had a quick comment about why the nation isn't involved in this. Since California provides a lot of the food for the nation, and there's a lot of water in the South that we see on TV every year flooding, how come they can't get the water here, but they can do the Keystone Pipeline for something we don't really need?
You know, it's been talked about, believe me, in the Southwest in particular. They've talked about pipeline schemes and other things to transport water. But, you know, the most logical place to pull it from is the Great Lakes. But the states surrounding, bordering on the Great Lakes, have all gotten together and signed a compact that do not allow, explicitly prohibits water exports from the Great Lakes, although bottled water companies, I believe, have an exemption. But in terms of building a big pipeline and sticking it into Lake Superior for California or Arizona, not going to happen.
Thank you, Dave, for the call. We always, when we talk about water, also get suggestions, recommendations, urgings about ways to save water. Here's Philippe, who tweets, if you want to save water, first thing would be to remove all those old-fashioned faucets in your showers.
Yeah, again, on the indoor side, it's a relatively small percentage. You know, you can make incremental adjustments, but the big thing is toilets, actually, not showers. There's still a huge number of, like, some million number of toilets, like 3 or 4 million or something in California. More than that, I think, actually, that are using 6, 7, 8 gallons per flush. That's where you can make the biggest difference.
Craig, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate you. And Craig Miller, again, is science editor for KQED. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. We're going to talk about the Grammys in the hour ahead. Stay tuned for that. There will be music. We'll talk to the producer of the Grammys and some music critics. And Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Stephanie Roberts and Devin Holt. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Holly Kernan. For all of us here at KQED, I thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.